Now on Sports Talk, it's SC Wild with Major Billy Downer of the Department of Natural Resources. Major Downer is here to take your questions about the great outdoors in South Carolina. Give him a call at 888-898-2525. It's SC Wild from DNR on the Sports Talk Radio Network.
All right, great Wednesday night here on Sports Talk. Getting a little cooler outside. Well, the other day it was really cold. Nice day today, though. A little cool. Folks getting outside. The hunters in our world getting outdoors to take care of business this time of the year. Fishermen doing the same thing, I guess. Great time to get outside and drop a line for a certain type of fish. Here I am killing time until we have the Major Billy Downer. I mean, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot over the years of doing this show with the Major, but I don't know enough to carry it. That's why we welcome in from DNR, the Major, Billy Downer, to Sports Talk and SC Wild. Good evening, Major. How are you?
Thank you, Phil. You're doing a nice job segueing into the show. Good job.
Thank you.
I give you credit. After 5 years, you've learned one thing or two, maybe.
One thing. The one thing is to make way for you. That's the one thing I've learned. And also, I've learned to stay away from alligators. So those are two things I've learned.
Exactly. Alligators and sharks.
Alligators and sharks. You got that right. You got your special guest. We got them. We got her standing by for you.
I do. We've got Molly Neese coming with us tonight, going to be on the show. She is the statewide waterfowl projects leader for DNR, kind of a new position we put back in place, and glad to have her on. If we've got her on, I just welcome on Molly. Thank you for joining us tonight.
All right. Thanks, Billy. Glad to be on.
Sure. So just want to talk tonight, Phil. We're going to talk about our migratory waterfowl season because that is fixing to kick off this Saturday. So everybody looks for duck season. You know, the seasons always change. We just had our youth day last Saturday, and our duck season will open up November the 19th and run through November 26th, the standard, what we always have called the Thanksgiving season, for a week there. And then it'll open back up December 12th and run through January 31st with the new options we've been given through the Flyway Council. We can go all the way through the end of January now, so happy to see that this year. Our duck limits this year, not much different than they always typically are. It is still a 6 total bag limit per day, per person, which can include no more than 3 wood ducks, no more than 2 of the following. Here's a little difference here, 2 mallards still, and no more than 1 of those can be a hen, which is a female, 2 redheads, or 2 scaup, and 2 canvasbacks. Now, the scaup is 2 all the way through December the 22nd, and then becomes 1 the 23rd through the 31st, 23rd of December, fall to the end of the season. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But again, your limit of 1 is your pintails. Your fulvous whistling duck, which few see, but we do have them. Black-bellied whistling ducks, we do have on the coast a good many. In some spots, particularly in the lower part of the state, in Jasper, Beaufort County. And our black ducks and mottled ducks have been the name, the same change that they've been for several years now. If you are east of 95, most people know where 95 is, it's 1 black or 1 mottled duck per day. If you're west of 95, you can shoot 2 black ducks or 1 black duck and 1 mottled duck. The difference on the eastern part is we're trying to protect our mottled ducks. You're not going to see a mottled duck typically in interior of the state. They are a coastal bird, and because they are so close, and in fact, most people can't identify the difference between a mottled duck and a black duck, particularly on the wing, we are limiting it to 1 of those type ducks east of 95 because it's just so hard to tell the difference between the two.
I have a question.
Of course you do.
I have a question. Let's say you're standing on the east side of I-95. That's where your boots are. You're over there. But the duck is on the west side, on the other side.
Don't do that, Phil. Stop that, Phil. Stop being silly.
No, seriously.
Nobody's going to be shooting across 95.
Okay.
However, let me say this.
All right.
There is actually a place where you could potentially be hunting like that, and that would be on Lake Marion. because 95 does cross Lake Marion. Now,
okay, so there you go.
If you're east of 95, the limit is 1-1. If you're west of 95, you can shoot 2. So where you take the birds is important. So if the birds are west, yes, you can shoot 2.
Okay.
The birds are east, 1. Because we would use the same law we would use, or same method for someone trying to shoot a bird over on someone else's land. If you fall, that bird falls over there, and you don't go retrieve that bird, and you shot a bird you know you can't retrieve, that's called wanton waste, and that's actually against the law. It keeps people from doing that, or it's supposed to discourage that. So, Milo, let me bring you in for a minute. Talk about our Milo ducks for a minute on the coast. We've done some more. I know we're continuing to do our Milo duck banding, preseason banding. Where are we on that right now as far as our Milo duck population?
Yeah, you know, we band a fair number of Milo ducks every year. We're targeting those bandings in the summer, usually in July and August, when those birds are flightless. They're regrowing their wing feathers during that time of the year. So we like to sneak up on them in the airboat and scoop them up at night. And we band a couple hundred Milo ducks that way every year on the coast. But, you know, we're probably settled in right now with about 20 to 21,000 Milo ducks is kind of a rough population estimate that we have in coastal South Carolina, which is pretty impressive considering that those birds were released here in the late 70s and early 80s, and we just released over 1,200 of those birds during that time period. So, you know, these bottle ducks have done really, really well in South Carolina. You know, they're a species that hunters really, really value, or quite the prize, and are one that are really special to me. I spent about 5 years of my professional career just studying model ducks, so it's exciting to see them continue to flourish here in coastal South Carolina, and I know our hunters really value those birds as well. So really done well since the late 70s and early 80s here.
Well, great. That's great information. I know just a few years back, we kind of realized how big our model duck population was. And so I know it's a surprise to a lot of folks. I say a few years ago, now it's probably been 10 years ago, when we just realized how many we had and how well they had done. So as part of your job and your new job description, I know you have been at Samworth for a number of years and been battling there with all the storms and things we have that wash out our dikes, but particularly on our coastal areas where we're managing for wintering waterfowl. It's a process that I think few people have an appreciation for the amount of work that you and others on our coastal WMAs, the work that you do. Talk a little bit, Molly, let's just talk a little bit about what it takes to manage those coastal impoundments that we're not necessarily planting in corn, but we're managing water levels to grow certain types of vegetation.
That's right. So, yeah, so real unique systems. Like I say, it's always a challenge anywhere where you are constantly managing moving water. You know, water is a really powerful force, and it, you know, it's constantly working against you, especially when you've got big water control structures and big earthen dikes and things where we used to hold water out of impounded systems. And so, you know, we do take a lot of storm damage. You know, we've been on a pretty good run here for 5 or 6 years of hurricanes and natural disaster events that have, you know, caused us some breaches and some challenges. But got excellent staff on the coast that have really developed and further, you know, further honed the skill set for quickly repairing breaches and major issues. And like I said, you know, in those systems, we are managing for natural vegetation, which has a lot of advantages. You know, one is, you know, in a moist soil setting where we're growing, you know, native annual grasses that are big seed producers, you know, those are environments where we can go in and manipulate. We can mow, we can burn, unlike you can do in a planted ag crop scenario. You know, we can't manipulate those settings because we created a faded field. But really cool thing about our coastal systems is they're really resilient. Places like Fair Island, Santee Coastal Reserve, you know, those private plantations in the Delta and the Ace Basin, you know, they're managing for dwarf spikerush and widgeon grass, which are more aquatic type plants. And so when we do have natural disaster events and damage to these coastal impoundments during the summer and the late fall, you know, the vegetation that grows in there is much more resilient. We don't have to worry so much about it being knocked down or are degrading to a point that it's no longer a good food source for waterfowl in the winter. So really, really valuable stuff, you know, high seed producers, good for invertebrates, which ducks also love. And so really good work we do on our coast, and you know, these natural crops really, really serve a lot of functions for us and keep birds fed and happy throughout the winter, so we can send them back north in the spring to the nest and hopefully come back our way with a larger fall flight. So,
well, that's good. So, Molly, tell me something. So a lot of our coastal impoundments were traditionally old rice fields, correct?
Correct.
All right. So is there, for the folks that don't understand that, is there any rice left in these fields?
It's not. You know, you do get some what people call a southern wild rice, you know, kind of in some tidal settings, but we don't really see that in our impoundments anymore. You know, we kind of lost the function of planting rice in these impoundments in the early 1900s largely from, you know, salt input from big hurricanes. Our fields became much too salty and to really support rice. And then places where we might still be able to, you know, if you've been on one of our lottery hunts or hunted another property in the area nearby, you know how fluffy and how soft those fields really are. So it really takes specialized equipment to do any kind of mechanized type planting. And you know, for the time and the input it would take to really aerially broadcast or seed anything in that type mechanism, you know, the seed that we produce, the invertebrates we produce, you know, managing for what's already naturally in that system, it's much more efficient, cost-effective, and really, you know, we're producing more feed, more duck energy days, as a duck scientist likes to call it, than really what we could do in more of an agriculture-placed type setting, as if we were to grow rice or another type of a millet or something like that that's really, really suited for a soft organic environment like you see there on the coast. So you know, our natives are really, really beneficial for us in a number of ways. So.
Right, and I appreciate you. That's why I wanted to mention that. I knew you did an excellent job describing it. A lot of folks hear rice fields and still think we have rice in them. I know there's some wild rice, but typically we're managing for widgeon grass and the other things, door spike rush, things like that, right, that birds use, as you said, naturally.
That's correct. So
right now, just let's give a little update right now. What are our coastal impoundments looking like as far as birds? I've heard we've got some birds in. I don't, you know, do we have any preliminary info on that? What's here?
You know, I was on a property, a state property yesterday up off of Lake Moultrie that really is a plant and flood area, but is really picking up good numbers of gadwall here over the past couple of days. So that's really encouraging. Yeah, I'm on the coast.
So is that Sandy Beach?
Yeah, Sandy Beach is really looking good. Staff's been working really hard there the past couple of years. We've had a couple of contract projects, which have really allowed us to take our management to the next level. And like I say, really, really encouraged and excited about what staff has done there. And I think we're really seeing, you know, a step forward in management and things there. I really think our bird numbers and habitat have improved drastically over the past couple of years on that property. I think we'll continue to do so.
Cool. So back home where on the coast where you're predominantly at, blue-winged teal, things like that moved in now?
Yeah, blue-winged teal. I've heard managers talk about an uptick in widgeon in the past week or so, but blue wings are nice and thick. You know, our green wing numbers are starting to tick up as well as the gadwall. And so, you know, it's a good time of year to be on the coast and to watch birds move in the evening. I know there was a lot of happy youth hunters around Santee Coastal Reserve this weekend and good reports of birds moving around in the area. And so I hope we're setting up for a really, really good season. And was watching the weather reports this morning. Looks like this big cold front hopefully will push some more birds to us. I know the Northeast is supposed to get some snow, and it's getting pretty chilly around the Great Lakes and then in the Mid-Continent right now. So hopefully that'll do well to push more birds our way too.
Yeah, and I don't know how we count ducks on the coast. Sometimes you got to swat out the notions, I mean, not the notions, those aren't the problem. It's the daggum mosquitoes and yellow flies that sometimes, to me, get confused with ducks because they're so stinking big down there. I do not know how our staff handles it. I have heard stories, Phil, just to tell you how bad mosquitoes are, that back in the day, Jamie Mills used to work, one of our officers. I know you know Molly. I know you know Jamie, or heard of Jamie. Used to work at Murphy Island and said, and they used to drop him off. He'd drive a tractor bush hogging all day long, and he'd have to stop to rake off the mosquitoes off the radiator because the radiator was getting hot because of the number of mosquitoes in the screen. So, oh, man, our people really do a good job in some really harsh conditions in the summertime. And I've been there in December on a youth hunt before at the Santee Coastal. And if it gets warm, mosquitoes just pop back out, and they will literally carry you off. I'm surprised that any ducks have any blood left when any mosquitoes are out. But, yeah, I'm glad to hear about the our numbers, like gadwall pintail. I know pintail's a big attention getter for folks that may be listening to hear pintail numbers up. That's always a great thing. Gadwall, to me, are just a great big duck that mixes in there is you know, great decoying ducks like a mallard, and I enjoy hunting those as much as any of them. It's good to hear that. So as progression on our coastal areas, you know, I know for years that you had Bear Island, Springfield was one of the bigger areas. And when I do the numbers, it seems like, Molly, that birds are moving back up in Santee Coastal, really becoming a big area again.
Yeah,
that,
you know,
from a management standpoint, just really – really honing in the management there?
You know, I would hope so, but, you know, I really think it's just, you know, sometimes I like to say ducks do duck things. You know, it's kind of hard. As much as we study them, the more that we know, the less that we know. You know, it seems that, you know, things have kind of been trending down in the ace over the past couple of years, but, you know, I hope the ace has a really good year, and I'm not sure it's certainly maybe attributed to, the management. I know places, you know, our properties, Santee, Fair Island, you know, state properties in the ace, you know, our management has really been top notch over the past couple of years, and, you know, a lot of well-managed private properties in that area as well. And just doesn't seem to be to have quite as strong numbers as, you know, the past couple of years they traditionally have, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's management related. It's just, you know, I think sometimes those ducks just know where they want to be and hold tight. So, but, hopefully the Upper Coast will share the love with the Low Country a little bit more this coming season. So.
Sure, and I guess what I'm pointing out is, you know, I know that Springfield, for instance, had some breaches from the hurricanes, like we said, all the challenges that we've had, and I think people have no idea how challenging that can be when salt water just flows into a unit like that, and how it just burns the soil, basically, and kills your plants back when you can't control the amount of salinity.
Yeah, too much salt will certainly make things challenging for us. And we get too much salinity in, you know, in the soils in a managed wetland. You know, it's a correctable problem, but sometimes it takes some time to get back where we want it, to flush that salt back out the system. So, but I'm feeling pretty good about Bear Island this year. It'll be a fun one to watch. They're good widging grass and spike brush in those systems, a good bull rush. You know, even our moist soil and our more kind of fresh water areas are really looking good, and good crops of panic grass and smart weeds. And so pretty excited to see what comes along. You know, those natural disaster events, they're not things that we can often come back from overnight. You're right, Billy. It does take, from a habitat management perspective, you know, you may be able to fix the breach or the trunk issue in a number of days or weeks, but sometimes when that salt water gets in, it takes a little bit longer to recover the system than it does the infrastructure issues.
Well, I think it's worth mentioning, people don't realize how many times we've had breaches in certain impoundments. And I know you've been directly dealing with some of that, with just a breach happens, and then as soon as we have another storm, another breach happens. Or even if we don't have a storm and you have a king tide, all of a sudden, because it's new ground and the soil really hasn't had on that dike a chance to settle, you know, breach comes again, and our staff is just basically throwing their hands up going, what do we do now? Because every time they turn around, a breach happens. And I don't think that the public understands the amount of work that our folks, and I agree with you, our folks do so much hard work.
We were crunching some numbers a while back, and if you took all of our perimeter dike system and our tidal impoundments, it's about 150 miles. You could stretch it from one end from Charleston to Columbia, and that's a lot of ground to cover.
150 miles of dikes that we manage.
Yeah. So pretty significant. So, you know, we do a lot of work in house ourselves. We definitely cover what we can ourselves, but you know, we have a lot of good partnerships with contractors and Ducks Unlimited too. And you know, it's a full time job for a lot of staff keeping these places up and running. And you know, their goal is they're constantly focused on the winter. Everything they do is thinking about managing for winter. So. It's a lot of fun for us to get to this time of year and you know enjoy your hard work. Get to sit back and watch birds come in the impoundments and see hunters come out with birds in their hand. It's definitely worth the wait, and it's a great reward for staff.
Sure. So, in terms of internal managing our inland impoundments, when I say inland, I mean more inland from the coast and our coastal impoundments. What are the different challenges on inland impoundments that we face that we have to, you know, to make good management there?
Yeah, you know, I think our inland challenges are much like our private landowners face that manage inland properties. You know, sometimes, you know, we're dealing with flooding issues even on our inland sites. You know, it may be large runoff events from the hills that will flood out a corn crop, or, you know, we deal with depredation issues the same as private landowners. You know, we take a ton of corn moss every year from hogs and deer and raccoons. And so, you know, we do our best to mitigate those with fencing situations and cannons and things like that as well. But, you know, those inland areas are also unique and come with their own set of challenges, you know, a different set of challenges than what we experience on the coast. But, with all waterfowl management, if you can't manage your water levels, you're not managing habitat. And so often our water level challenges come at a little different time of year. It tends to be a little more spring-oriented in our upland sites as opposed to the coast. But, you know, mostly just all keeping the water where we want it when we want it.
So. Right. So, again, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight so we could kind of highlight our waterfowl preparations. I think, like I said, I really want folks to hear the amount of work that goes into that. 150 miles of dikes on the coast is incredible when you think about that amount of management that's got to be, you know, continually managed, continually cut, cleaned, make sure, you know, you don't have trash and things that come through there. We also have, and I know you could speak to this, is we're still using the old trunk system because it's still one of the best systems to manage water levels. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, still, you know, a historic system. You know, it works based off the tide and water pressures. It's a gravity fed system to where we can set gates to pretty much, you know, open a pipe, a hollow opening through a dike. On high tide, we can push water in. And then when high tide falls out, you decrease your water pressure on your tidal side of the dike, your inside dike closes, or your inside gate closes, and the water pressure inside the impoundment, you know, closes that gate and holds the water inside the impoundment. Much like you see on kind of upland systems, we also got a flashboard riser system built into that helps us regulate and keep water levels consistent inside the impoundment. So really, really neat, really neat water control structures, you know, things that we're proud of because of the historical aspects, and they work so well for us. And there's only a handful of people that know how to build those structures, and a number of private plantations build those structures themselves, and we build our own trunks, a number of our own trunks on our properties ourselves. And so definitely a unique piece of history to be able to use and operate those water control structures and build them ourselves. So.
Well, cool. Well, Molly, I know we're short on time, but thank you so much for joining us tonight. I appreciate you giving us a highlight on our waterfowl management and what our season is going to look like. Phil, we appreciate your time and on the show, too.
Major, great
Absolutely.
Job. Molly, thank you. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Learned a lot. SC Wild from DNR here on Sports Talk. Have a great night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.